Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Stay at Home Actor Podcast. My name is Sarah and I am the host for today's podcast. I had such a good time talking to today's guest. I think you're going to love her. She is a mom and a stunt professional. Her name is Jessica Erin Bennett, and she's an Atlanta-based stunt professional and intimacy director and coordinator with credits such as stunt doubling Billie Eilish on Swarm, intimacy coordinating shows such as The Big Door Prize, Swarm, and upcoming The Idea of You, intimacy direction for Nashville Reps Fences and Nashville Symphony's The Jonah People, stunt coordinating the Never Hike Alone series and You're Killing Me on Showtime. I mean, she truly does it all. That's wild. Jessica can also be found teaching at SAFD Regional Workshops, Acting Out Academy Summer Camp, and Sweet Spot of the Flame Fireburn Workshops. Jessica is also a founding member and COO with Intimacy Professionals Education Collective. That's IPECintimacy.com. I will put that in the show notes, where they offer movement-based training for intimacy directors, coordinators looking for certification and continued education. You can connect with Jessica on Instagram at Jessica E. Bennett. I will also put her Instagram in the show notes. Jessica is just such an impressive human being. She's hilarious, kind, down-to-earth, warm, nurturing, all of the things, and it led to a really wonderful conversation, I felt. She's just such a safe person to talk to. That's the first word that comes in mind, is safe. Like, you feel safe around her, which is important considering she's an intimacy coordinator. But I think you're going to love her. I think you're going to love listening to her. So without further ado, here is Jessica. I just went to LA for the first time this past year. I fell in love with it. I didn't know what to expect because people don't always say like the nicest things about Los Angeles, I guess. You know, did you love living there when you did live there?
Yes and no. There's a lot of people that I love. Like when we go home, we say it feels like going home. It really does. Mm-hmm. But living there sucks. Because if you are not super wealthy, we always lived in blue collar neighborhoods, especially in the San Fernando Valley. And we loved it. We lived in North Hollywood off and on, for 8 years. And I really loved it. But you are consistently aware, of like, how are you going to move up in this world? It was like, yeah. No matter how hard I worked, my overhead was what it was. And it never got cheaper. And we didn't live in like, I never had central air and heat until I moved to Atlanta.
Wow.
So you just, it is awesome. And the world is at your fingertips. And I got opportunities that I would have never imagined, and learned things about culture that I didn't even know I was missing, because you are living with so many languages. You're living with not your lived experience. So for that reason, it was a really great place to spend my 20s in. Like for that reason, I loved it. But I, you know, especially in like 2020, we looked at each other, in our, you know, house that we paid a mortgage on. And we were like, can you imagine being in our bungalow right now? Can you imagine? And we were like, no, we cannot.
So we were living in this tiny, apartment in Decatur in Atlanta, but not really Decatur.
I know where you speak of. I spent some time there.
Yeah. And we like really try to be friends with our neighbors, but like they didn't like our dog, which is totally fine. But our dog, cutest puppy in the world, but really crazy. Anyways, what a time 2020 was. Sometimes I can't believe that even really happened. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It was like, so wild. And we, I had my daughter in April, the beginning of April of 2020. So like the world, like I was very aware that like how crazy the world was, because like our doulas couldn't be there. And I had to walk through the external hospital to get into the hospital, to the maternity ward. And like, I watched nurses go from like normal dressed nurses to hazmat suits. So it was just like, it was super wild. But then on the flip side, being in film and TV, you do not get leave Right. I mean, you could take as much time off as you want. And so it ended up being a little bit of a weird privilege for us, because it was like everybody was kind of being run really hard into the ground. And it's, I don't know, I was hoping the lessons we learned in the pandemic would carry over. They did not. But for like me and a few other of my friends who had babies at that time, it was just kind of like this opportunity to not leave and to not focus on anything else. And for that was kind of nice. And I like nothing else about the pandemic was nice. Like I lost family members. And like we couldn't go to their funerals because we had someone so small. So I don't enjoy that part. But the rest, there was like a like odd silver lining for sure.
Oh, I'm so sorry, by the way. I joke that like the strike was not fun for a lot of reasons, but like that's when I got pregnant. So it's not the same thing. But in terms of, well, like if there's ever a time for me to be pregnant,
yeah,
while acting, I started the podcast in general because I always had the fear of if I got pregnant, then it would limit opportunities maybe with acting. And in some ways it could and can, you know, but I like to have a positive outlook on it all and think you can do everything. And so anyways, I kind of felt that with the strike, like it wasn't the most fun thing, but I also understand right. It was necessary, all those things. What age did you know that you wanted to be a stunt performer?
I think it was 18. I think it was 18. I was a nerd and a jock growing up. And I went to school. I started in Miami looking to do theater. And I came from a kind of a rural high school. So like getting into the BFA programs was harder. Like I just couldn't figure it out. And even my theater teacher then, who is now runs a whole theater department at a university, then he was like, I actually don't know how this works, and getting auditions in. So I ended up as a BA in theater there. And I wasn't a good fit. And you know, it's a very much more of a musical theater program. And I was never going to be a chorus in a chorus line on Broadway. Like I was never going to be part of the chorus. I just never played those kinds of characters. And so my first year there, I kind of was like leaning towards changing my major to pre-med, but it just kept not feeling like the right fit, and it just wasn't happy. And so, my whole life I've ridden horses. It's like all I've ever really done. I grew up on a horse farm, which is not to be mistaken for growing up on a farm. I do have a green thumb, but I think people often think I'm kind of like a little country bumpkin. I'm like, no, I'm from Metro Nashville. Like I think you'd be really surprised and disappointed if you thought I was like a farm girl. And so I just remember, cause I loved, I loved taking dance class. I loved movement. I loved sports. And also when I got to theater school, there was like no sports. And I was like, this sucks. And so I was just, I remember, and this was, you know, back in 2005. So the internet, you know, was dial-up AOL. And I was just trying to do what internet searches I could. And at the time, like the big movie series was Lord of the Rings. And I just remember all the ring wraiths. And I was like, well, those were people who rode horses and they had to like be pretty good, like doing what they did. So who are those people? So some Google searches, some AOL searches later, I found out those were stunt people. And I said, well, I guess that's what I want to do. I want to do that.
And this is maybe a silly question, but I said stunt performer, but like, is that the right way to, is that the right term?
Okay. Yeah. There's some people use like other things. Some people say stunties. I hate that. But yeah, stunt performer. I like stunt performer because it's an all encompassing thing. And on a lot of my bios, I'll put stunt professional, mainly because now I also do stunt coordinate. So it just kind of is like a more open term. But yes, stunt performer's totally right. So I ended up re-auditioning for schools and got into DePaul, which was still a cut program at the time. So I got in 2006, and everybody at UM was like, you are taking a whole year of school and almost negating it because you're going to go to a required 4-year program. Doesn't matter nothing, it doesn't matter. And they could still cut you. And I said, it's more worth it to try than stay. So I went and I didn't get cut. Woo. But they also had a pretty, a larger opportunity for stage combat. And also Chicago had a much bigger, just inherent theater scene. So I knew one of my other choices, my thought process was, if I go to school here and if I like the city, I can stay here. Whereas I kind of felt like with what I wanted to do, if I was in Florida, I didn't really know much about live stunt shows at the time, which would have been a great option. I just wasn't aware of them. In Nashville has a pretty good art scene. So I just live stunt shows just really wasn't on my radar. I didn't know a lot about it. So I went to Chicago thinking, well, worst case scenario, just stay here. And then what's also great about Chicago is not only like the stage combat opportunities was pretty prevalent. And so I got a lot of mentorship and a lot of guidance, but also a lot of TV shows. And so this was like pre Chicago Fire, pre Med PD. So we had some of the serials that were pre that. So that's kind of opportunities where the stunt, you know, so a lot of those stunt people would let us like hang out in their cars. We'd hang out on set. We'd stay out late and go to school in the morning. And they'd watch our early reels, they'd watch our stuff, and they gave us so much encouragement. So, but yeah, that's how I pretty much was just like, well, I guess that's what I want to do because I just really want to ride horses. That's all I really wanted to do. And then they told me I had to learn 1,000 other things, and I was like, oh, fine.
Okay, so that kind of leads in then to my next question. What are the various, if someone's listening to this and they want to go into stunts one day, like what would you tell them are the various paths to become a stunt performer, and what was your specific chosen path?
Well, there's many, many paths in, and often, so a lot of stunt performers come in either as just like natural athletes, but they'll also come in as high performance athletes and just somebody who's had a lot of experience in a martial art, or they're a diver. For me, I came in as like a high level horse person. Cause I didn't just was like a couple horse shows. Like I really did really high level. And I also trained horses when I was a teenager. So I, at a higher level, people come in. So it is, people can come in through their sport. People can come in through like live shows and theater and kind of find their way in there, especially in LA back in the day. Like it was a lot of like Terminator or Waterworld or Knott's Berry Farm. People would come in. Also there's still live stunt shows in like Orlando to like Disney and whatnot. So people will still come in through that. I did some live stunt shows back in LA. So unfortunately there's not one way in. And now, back when I started, when you got to LA, there was like almost like this new person checklist that you did was get invited to the stunt hangout bar. They don't do that anymore. And then it was to get invited to Bob's Backyard, which Bob Yerkes is a circus guy. He was one of the very first stunt guys. And some other stunt coordinators would run workouts twice a week or three times a week. I don't remember. And you could just go for free and learn and train. And then Joe Witherall had High Falls. And I also went to the International Stunt School in Seattle while I was still in college. I really loved going because I don't, you know, my parents are science people. Like they were like, I do not know what you're talking about. It also, a lot of the Chicago folks went there. So I got, it was almost like an immediate connection because they knew what my basics were. And it doesn't make you a stunt performer by going, but it does teach you what some of your basics are and the things that you kind of inherently have a knack for and the things that you're really bad at. So it's like, oh, I have to work on that. And also to like show you like, this is where I am as a beginner. And this is how I know to market myself. Cause I do, they still do marketing classes. Like how do you do that? So what's so difficult is because I came in an analog era of stunts, like sending your reels to coordinators was impossible. You had to like send them just the YouTube link and hope they watched it. Now there's online stunt profiles like crazy. Whereas back in the day, there was like one or two and you had a calling service and you paid them $50 a month. And then they would call and be like, hey, Missy, Do you have some people that are like this and miss you would send in your stuff? So that doesn't exist anymore. And so it's all stunt online profiles and people look at your social media. And there's also like Facebook groups where people ask, like I've gotten jobs from Facebook posts. So it's just it couldn't be a more different world. Cause I've been in the business since 2009 and it could not be more different. So I often lovingly say when people are like, how do you get a start? And I'm like, I have no idea.
That was kind of one of my questions was like for actors, I guess Actors Access would be the most common mm-hmm. website you want to sign up for, have your materials on that and casting directors find you there. What is the like top website? What's the Actors Access equivalent for stunts?
The equivalent would be something called Stunt Listing, because there is a free option for Stunt Listing and they allow union and non-union performers. The rest of the catalogs don't. And then there's also breakdown services called the Stunt Bulletin, Stunt Contact. They do cost money and they basically send you, and there's also the Stunt Breakdown. And you pay for those services and they send you the contacts that they have and you can submit that way. So there's ways to get your stuff out there, but I would say Stunt Listing is the one I always tell people to get on because you don't have to have union status. You can be non-union. And you can create a whole profile. And then because you have then places like iStunt where you have to just be union. And then you have places like StuntBone where you have to have at least, I don't remember. I think it was at least 3 union jobs. I don't remember now, but they verify them.
Do you have a specific headspace that you have to get into or that you like to get into before doing an intense scene or you just do it?
It's kind of both. It totally depends. It totally depends. I've done like big fight scenes, but because it's something that I've done for a very long time, I don't get like really psyched out about it or big falls. But I did a car hit for the TV show Swarm. And I was stunt doubling Billie Eilish on a show. And also on the show, I was their intimacy coordinator. So like everyone on the show knew me. I had been on there a lot. And so it was like, oh my God, I'm not anonymous showing up to do this job. Like everyone's going to be rooting for me and I need to do a good job. And we had a great rehearsal. And it was also a night shoot. So we had a ton of prep time, night shoot. So like, I get kind of amped up and focused and, you know, something that requires a lot of energy, just like hitting your mark specifically on a car hit and that car hit to where I had to get hit by the car and where I could be thrown to stay in frame was really, really specific. So like, I just go through it over and over in my head. I know what the rotation feels like because everything in stunts is really calculated. So it's not like hope for the best. It's really, so even doing that car hit, I knew it was like 3, 2, 1, where I stood, the person driving, you know, she did the same speed every time for like, not only rehearsal, like once we dialed it in, she never missed her mark. So it allowed me to always hit my mark. And then I knew to ride it and I would do about 3-quarter turn onto the windshield. I'd go 3, 2, and then I'd roll off. So like, I just knew that how to hit it. So it's just going through it. And so it's a lot of adrenaline. So when it was over, I was like, I'm tired. And the rest of the night was like, really, for me, it was pretty chill. Cause after that, like we did either moments of it. Cause I did like 3 or 4 takes of that. And then the rest of it, I was dead. So
yeah,
I could handle that.
Were you a Billie Eilish fan already? And then got to, like, did you book the job and you were already a fan?
No, I'm one of those people. I think it's because growing up in Nashville, like I just grew up around singers and songwriters. So I really, what's wrong, baby? Do you want to come here? What? You're hungry? Well, daddy can get you food. Come here. We're having 4-year-old crisis.
Oh, I love it.
We're having 4-year-old crisis. I'm not sure what the crisis is about.
Come here.
You know, but I really like Billie Eilish music. I actually love her Bond theme song, like a great deal, but, I guess it might be because I've been in the business for so long. I'm not easily starstruck except once. I will tell you about it, but, one time I was starstruck, but I just, and also being the intimacy coordinator for the show, I'd actually already prepped another scene that Billy was in. And so I kind of like some of the mystere about it all, I just like didn't have. And, you know, off, can you say hi?
Nope. Hi. Okay.
So I just kind of the mystery of it, I just was like, oh, well, I have a job to do.
Right.
So I just did, I was really wasn't thinking about it. For me, it was, I was kind of, when I first got the call, it's a stunt coordinator I work for often. His name is Andy Rusk. And he's such a good coordinator. And he just like takes such good care of us. And so he not only called me what we call for like a hot seat job, like one that like it's a really big deal, right? And you're in the hot seat. And not only was it a hot seat job, but it was for like the number one pop artist in the world at the moment. I just like, I think the thing that really was like, oh God, was like oh, this is not going to be a joke. This is going to be this is a big deal. And everyone is going to be watching it. Like everyone's going to watch this.
Right.
And we ended up being shortlisted for an Emmy for it. So like, it was just, that was really cool. The one person I got starstruck over was Dolly Parton.
I love that.
Yeah. You have a Dolly Parton book, don't you? Uh-huh. I was working on her show called Heartstrings. It's such a sweet show. So I got to do the J.J. Sneed episode because it's kind of like an anthology series. And so she's in the show, but she's like not in the show. Like she does her own little special vignettes within the show itself. And so I did a ton of horsework and wagon work and stunts on this episode. It was like, I was like, I loved it so much. It was like the most fun month. We go to the airport next week, honey. She's really obsessed with airplanes.
I am too. I get it. That's I love an airplane.
Yeah. Sarah also loves an airplane. But I didn't know she was going to be there on this specific day. And I was like, me and another guy were the main stunt doubles. And we were like robbing this bank. And it turns out we're robbing her nephew. And I didn't know that. And she just like walks up and stands next to me. And I didn't have the courage to talk to this amazing human being. She was so nice. She was so communicative and appreciative of everybody on set. She was wonderful. And because she was so wonderful, I was like, and like, I'm doubling her number one on the call sheet. And I just like, couldn't get it together. I just like, couldn't get it. I couldn't talk to her.
She does. She seems like she's one of those people that like her public persona would match how she really is.
Yeah.
In real life.
She really is. And she was also dressed like Dolly Parton. She looked like Dolly Parton. She just, it was just like, oh, you are everything that you said. And also growing up in Nashville, one of my middle schools I went to, I drove by her house all the time. And so I was just obsessed. I was like, oh my God, I know where one of your houses was. And, I just didn't have the gumption. Whereas I've worked with really big name actors. And so it's just the one time I just like couldn't get it together.
I feel like I'm basic. I love Taylor Swift, which like who I feel like everyone does these days, but I have loved her since our song came out. Okay. So
you're a real one.
I'm a real one. No, I don't even care. But I do think there's a lot of people who maybe I wouldn't be starstruck by, not because I don't think they're great, but like you said, like it's just, they're just like, they're human beings. Like that's just their job. And they just became widely known from their job, you know? But I do think I would be starstruck maybe by Taylor Swift, but maybe I wouldn't, maybe I would surprise myself. I'm not sure.
You know, it's so hard to tell. And I think also the more people that you meet that you're like, wow, I really think what you do is amazing. It does get easier and easier, which is why Miss Parton surprised me so much.
Yeah.
It surprised me so much. And my heart was racing because I was really going to like, I was working on the gumption to talk to her and I just couldn't do it. So Miss Parton, if you're listening to this, I doubled Willa Fitzgerald on JJ's need, and I was just, I just wanted to talk to you so bad, and I just didn't have the confidence.
I would love it if Dolly Parton was listening to my podcast. I love it. That would be amazing. Yes or no, have you ever had someone that like was a big name that disappointed you that you thought would have been better in real life?
Oh yeah.
What a bummer.
It's such a bummer. It is a stone cold bummer. And there's been a few times where, oh, don't push that because it'll turn mama off. There's been a couple of times that I was like, what a bummer. And then a couple of times I was like, this is devastating. What a bummer.
Have you ever met Taylor Swift?
Yes. I have not.
I figured I'm just like, that would be a bummer, but you know, she's very powerful. So
she's, and that, I think that's the other thing too. You meet some of the folks that I've met, you have to realize like also where they are coming to you from. So there's people who are like, oh, this such and so is terrible. And then you meet them and you're like, no, they're not. You are expecting them to be like the other grips, but they live their whole lot. Like they live a huge chunk of their life, not letting everyone down. And like there's the amount of pressure that people are under. She had a bunch of shots today. So I think she's starting to feel really crummy.
Oh, I know. I'm so sorry. I love that she's here with us though.
I know. She's in a lot. She makes a lot of appearances, especially in like intimacy meetings, because there are a lot of like Zoom meetings, and like she pops in. They're like, "Do we need to pause?" I'm like, "No, keep going. Okay. Thank you." But yeah, so I just think I always say if you're number 1 through 6 on the call sheet, it's just there's a lot of eyeballs on you. So I've given people a lot of breaks. Whenever someone is like truly disappointing, I'm like, "You've had to be disappointed." You know what I mean? Like, you have to jump through some hoops to be like, wow, you suck.
That is really unfortunate.
Yeah. But especially the people, there are people who blow you away though. You're like, oh wow, you're like even more amazing than I could have thought. And that is cool.
Oh, that's nice. Did the idea of motherhood, did that ever scare you in terms of career?
Yeah. Well, I didn't even consider motherhood until after I was 30. To the point where a lot of my friends in LA, when we, you know, told them, they were like, you're kidding, right? You're kidding. Like, we were just like staunchly like, no way. There's no way. Mm-hmm. But I think moving to Atlanta, finding a consistent way of life, and also a little bit more security, like being able to put a down payment on a house as opposed to renting, and then you don't, you know, there's no rent control where we were living. So your rent can go up by $1,000 and nobody asks you your permission. That wasn't going to happen to us ever again. So it really didn't cross my mind, really. And it was just kind of suddenly one day, I just thought, like, I'm working really hard. We're doing all these things. And I started asking myself, like, why? Why? Like, for me, why? Because I am not personally motivated by fame. I'm not personally motivated by wealth. And one of the things that I love most about myself is I deeply love people. I tell people all the time, like, if I could just find a way to just love on people and be able to make like decent amount of money, that's what I'd want to do, which is, I think, why I found myself in the career that I have, because I just get to like love on people. So I've put a lot of thought into it. And I just think it just was one of those things that I'd never even asked for myself, because I never thought I could have it. Like, I really just never thought.
You never thought you could have motherhood because of the lifestyle, like in LA, you're saying, and like how expensive it is. Okay.
That and like community. I knew so few people that stayed in LA with kids. So it was just like, well, what community, you know? And like, and I actually feel like a lot of our friends in LA would have been the chosen aunts and uncles, because they still are, and they live thousands of miles away. Like, they're the people who check on her the most. They're the people who send random things, or if I'm like, gosh, we're going through a time right now, you know, an Amazon order shows up my door, like that, more so than anyone else here, because we do have some people here that are just absolutely incredible. But it just it never ceases to amaze me. So we always feel like we would have been well supported and loved. but we just didn't have a lot of examples around us. And especially in the stunt world, there are stunt moms, but they're not really open about their journey or their story. And it's a very well hidden secret. They always say, don't tell anybody that you're pregnant because you'll be pregnant for 5 years. I hid it deeply. We never did a formal announcement. I did announce it a little bit earlier. There was there's a Friday the 13th series I do called Never Hike Alone. It's a trilogy. And they take a lot of BTS photos. And I went in like 8.5 months pregnant. So I was like, oh God, I'm just going to look like a little, you know, short whale walking around. So I did announce it because I also, that was like one of my, I knew kind of one of my last jobs. I had just finished doing Lovecraft Country for HBO, doing their intimacy. And then I did that. And that was going to take me to the end of February. And we were having a baby at the beginning of April. So I kind of was prepared for March to be kind of like, we're not really doing anything. So I was open about that. But yeah, it basically 8.5 months. And then the world shut down. So I kind of felt a little bit more empowered to like say something, because I was like, what are you going to do? Not hire me?
Right.
Great. Nobody else is. There's no hiring going on. Right.
Nobody's working right now.
Nobody's working. And I actually felt a lot of empowerment during that time. I used to have like a really crummy relationship with social media. And like I said before, we actually book work off of socials, and I'm really annoyed by it. But it also gave me an opportunity to reframe my relationship with social media. And so I started using it as like encouragement through fitness, not because I was like getting my body back. Granted, there was an aspect for that for me, because my job does require me to look like other people who don't eat, right? So like there's a little bit of that in there, and a little bit of like, I was hoping to, because I had the time to show like, this is how stunt women get back. It's not magic. It's not a miracle. This is, you know, and I've always had a gym in my house. My gym is actually like right here, all my equipment. In Atlanta, in my house, this is also my closet. It's like a triple use space. So I just kind of was like demystifying, because what the number one thing people were messaging me was, I didn't know that stunt women had kids. I didn't know that I could even do like all these things. And I just thought, well, gosh, I said all the same things. Mm-hmm. I said all the same things, and I said them to myself. And I was like, maybe, and like, not that I'm going to like be the one woman show on this, but I thought, well, maybe I can demystify it. Maybe just a little bit. And, you know, and I'm to a point in my career where my friends are stunt coordinators. So it felt really good to just be like, see, you should hire women. There's no reason why. And like, I did my first, like one of my first stunt jobs back, it was 5 months postpartum. The goal was sooner than that, but there was no work anyway. But I shared this on social media a couple weeks ago. I did a movie called Southern Gospel, and I did this huge whitewater stunt. And like, I just jumped right back in, and it was just like, this is not a mystery. You should stop like you should trust women when they give you a boundary. If they say, yes, I can do it, you should just trust them and not be like this savior figure of a man of whether someone can do their job or not, because they will probably tell you whether they can or not.
And like, we've talked to our doctors, you know?
You haven't. And
yeah.
And it became an experience of like, how can I reuse socials? And it has put me in a better mindset with it and put better boundaries on it, because I understand the storytelling aspect of it a little bit more. So I just feel, it just feels better. So it's something I'm very grateful for, to have been a little bit noisy about it, mm-hmm. which that felt good to do. And again, I don't think it brought any sort of revolution, but if it inspired one or two people, I mean, that's a win.
Right. Totally. Oh, and when you say like you worked for 8.5 months of your pregnancy, is that what you said?
Uh-huh.
Throughout your pregnancy? What did that look like in terms of getting to third trimester, let's say, and doing stunt work?
Yeah. So I was, I did stunt work until I was 7 months pregnant. I performed. I also do some safety work. So like I do fire safety stuff. My last performing job was on Lovecraft Country. I was doing a fight. And I felt perfectly safe to do it. The whole point wasn't falling really. But the issue became, I went to a fitting and they were like, what are your sizes? And I was like, I have no idea. So I had to like kind of guess. And then I went, we had our fittings, and then the job was a week later. And I went in a week later, and putting those clothes on was effort. I mean, effort. And I thought, okay, if we can't fit in the wardrobe after we've been fit, I think we need to draw a limit. Uh-huh. So for me, it was obviously safety. I did falling jobs probably until I was like 4 months pregnant. The way that my doctor put it was, once baby was outside of my pelvis, that they were lacking a little bit of that like safety. And then from there, I just kind of, I just believe that when we ask for what we need, like blessings can come. And I'm not a religious person. I'm more of just like a woo-woo universe kind of human. And like the stunt jobs that I could do just kept coming my way. And then I also, I work as an intimacy coordinator. So I had a whole other career that I was doing simultaneously. And I think I made insurance by the skin of my teeth that year. Because there was things I did say no to. And then there were people that were like, people asked me if I was available. And I was just like, oh, I'm already booked. And my brain was like, I can't do that job. But, kind of like standard in stunt work is that they'll just call you and ask you if you're available, and they won't tell you what they expect. And that was also, that experience helped me be a little bit braver, which I know sounds silly. This is a very misogynistic line of work. And now it really started to empower me to ask them more specifics. Hey, could you let me know more specifically what you're asking me to do? Because it let me know whether I could do the job or not.
Right.
And now I even ask like, hey, do you know if this is a day or night shoot? Because it really does affect my childcare and whether it's available or not. Mm-hmm. So, and we have no family around, zero. So, I am grateful also for that experience to advocate for myself more and to tell other people like, this isn't disrespect. This is just me trying to make sure that I can do the job and not just say yes to you. And it seems very reasonable to me, but some people don't like it. That's their problem.
No, I was going to say, I clearly don't know anything about the stunt world, but it does, just from an outsider's perspective, it sounds a bit like the bare minimum to just like, hey, could I get some more details?
Could you let me know what's going on? You would think, but there's things in like my tenure, and also I have a few friends that have retired, and they're just like, when you're not in the middle of it anymore, you have time to think. And they're like, that's weird. You're like, it is weird. And they just expect us to do A, B, and C. And you're like, yeah, that is weird. Like, you just don't think about it until you're out of the game.
Yeah. The entertainment industry just operates by its own rules.
It really does.
They just do their own things, but it's fine. That's another topic for another day.
I was about to say, that's like a whole hour of itself just to be like, I don't know what's going on. And now I work with an agent for work, and even just conversations with them, I'm like, what's happening? And they're like, we don't know. We don't know. It's wild out there. And post strike, everyone is like, we don't know. It's very strange. You're like, it is. Okay. Well, it's not just me. I'm not like lost my mind.
Yeah, I know. I feel like I'm losing my mind all the time. So it's fun.
Yeah.
If you don't mind, I was going to do a quick like lightning round of questions.
Okay.
The first one is, what is your favorite project that you've ever worked on?
I think my answer right now is the TV show Swarm, because not only did I get to serve as their intimacy coordinator, but I also got to do stunt work. And like, what a dream. What a dream.
Yeah, getting to do both.
That was cool.
If someone's an indie filmmaker, how do we best cast or find a stunt performer? But make sure it's the proper way to do so and safe.
I would say, I mean, at this point too, like reach out to the people that you know really and truly do it to ask for their advice. Cause like I work indies all the time and I find ways to fit in people's budgets all the time. And I know how to work around the union all the time. Right. So ask the people around you. I'd say be wary of hiring a stunt professional on your own because you may not know the questions to ask. Because not every stunt professional is someone who could coordinate their own stunt. And there are stunt professionals who could coordinate their own stunt. So I think that's it totally depends. But also just like reach out to your like local resources. Also, if there's someone who does like stage combat at a university near you, they are also really helpful because they might also be training a student who's interested in the work. So I would say don't, unless you're just casting an actor with those skills, but I wouldn't be doing stunts with like full-on stunts without those professionals in mind, because oftentimes there's a misconception of like, oh, I'll just throw a mat down. But I've had people like fall into the mat and still break their arm, right? And you're like, ooh, right? So you just, it's one of those things like ask yourself what like the risk versus the reward. And maybe I can ask my resources because like people like, I love doing indie stuff. You just never know. You just never know.
I think that like people have the assumption that someone has done all the cool projects that you've done wouldn't want to do an indie anymore, you know?
Yeah. And I don't know very many people who wouldn't. And I always say, I'm a pretty cheap date, but if you don't ask me, you don't get to find out, you know?
I love that. You are so funny. Oh my gosh. What is a typical day look like for your family with y'all both working?
Well, it depends if I'm on set or not. And like I was in Utah for a week and then I was at the University of Central Arkansas for a week. So that is just my spouse, you know, flying by the seat of his pants, hoping for the best. And we have babysitters that we trust and some friends that are like family. So we just really rely on the village that we've built. She often will go to work with him because he works. He's a manager at a music store and he's a composer and sound designer. But since the strike, he's been more music stores. So she might go to work with him when I'm home. If it's just a meeting day, I schedule my meeting. So it's around school pickup and school drop off because she's in preschool now. And then I kind of fit training in those windows to the best of my ability. I don't get to go to like stunt gyms as much anymore because it's either right at the time I try to put meetings, because I have, you know, the life of a coordinator. So, you know, there's meetings and prep. I also run an intimacy company where we do intimacy education training. So like my days are a lot of computer work and I train in between those windows. And I also have two senior dogs. So it's just a lot of like I don't think every one day looks the same. And if I'm on set, that will change. That changes things too.
Right. I kind of expected that to be somewhat the answer because it's a freelance lifestyle, basically.
Yeah, I think, and there's often when I get asked about like, what's the day in the life like? What is, and I'm like, I don't know. Would you like to know about Tuesday or Friday? Or would you like to know about the month of June? I'm in Alabama for 4 days with no family, but then I drive back that last night so I can be a mom by 7 a.m. Like, you know, just, it just totally depends. And it depends if I'm on a show or if I'm day playing. It just, you never know.
that answers it. The next two don't really relate to stunt. It's just a fun life question.
Great.
If you had to choose your next family vacation right now, what would you say it would be?
Oh, I'm so embarrassed. I just want to go to the stupid beach. I just want to go to Destin. It's not even fancy. I just want to go to the beach.
No, I think that's fair. I think I miss the beach.
Yeah, that's all I want. It's so silly. Like, and also because I travel a lot for work, the idea of doing like going overseas, I'm like, I don't want to do that. Not today.
Right. No, just lay out, have a nice drink of your choice, whatever it is. Read a book.
Yes, and stay somewhere where I don't have to clean it.
I love it. Okay, favorite dessert.
Chocolate ice cream.
Okay, perfect. I love it. Simple, classic. She's a beauty.
And she never lets you down.
She never lets you down. We love her. She's loyal.
She's loyal. Yes. Yes.
Jessica, thank you for chatting with me today.
You're welcome. Sorry. Did you get the last two of your listener questions answered?
Somebody does want to know what you like most about the process of stunt work.
I love any sort of rehearsal process of when we're trying to dial it in and figure it out. I just find that really fun because you don't know the answer yet. And that's what I love the most about stunt coordinating and why I love stunt coordinating indie films, that I can't solve a problem with money. I have to solve it with creativity. And so I'm kind of a math nerd. So I love trying to like figure out how the puzzle is going to get put together. I think that's my favorite.
Okay. I love that. And what kind of projects are most exciting to you?
You know, when I'm interviewing for projects, I say I like the tricky shows. I like things that put problems, but I don't like the word problem, but put challenges in front of me. So for like stunt work, I like something that may not be necessarily like complicated, but it's tricky and you've got like to be a little bit on point. Because I stunt coordinate primarily indies, same thing. And then for intimacy, because I do like high profile jobs, I love the hard shows, not because I don't like the stressful shows. There's a difference because you can do a hard show and you've got people who try to stress you out. And I feel like I'm like, they're trying to kill me. But, you know, like when I think of some of my favorite projects, it's because somebody was like, here's what we're asking for. And we have got to get, we wrote this, but we're trying to get over here to this. How do we do that? I'm like, oh my God, let's figure it out. Like, I love it. I did intimacy direction for a play for a university in the winter. And we had one cast that didn't want to touch. They didn't want to touch. And I was brought in to create touch languages for the marriages for cast A and B. And cast A is, graduate students. They have a lot of acting in and about. And the other ones are undergraduate students and freshmen. And they are like, we do not touch. And they were like, we're so, so sorry. I was like, are you kidding me? What a gift. I said, how many married couples you know, do you think that they literally go to bed at night and are like, I don't think I touched that other person. Huh? And I said, it doesn't mean they don't love each other any less. They just have a different love language. And so we got to create these beautiful moments of marriage that were connected and beautiful, and they barely even touched. And when they chose to touch, it was so chosen and pointed that it made a point. And I just lit me up. I was like, oh, fun. Let's figure. I just couldn't wait. And I had a blast.
I love it.
Yeah.
You'd be a great just director too. I can tell. I love that.
One day I think that's so hard about this industry in general is you have to hyper-focus, right? Because there's only so much time. There's only so much money that you can spend doing this one thing. And I think you have to eventually be like, what would be next? And I know for me, the concrete is indeed getting harder. It's starting to be like, oh, that hurt. I did like a couple years ago, I did a gag and I got up and I thought, well, that hasn't hurt before. That hurt. Mm-hmm. And it's just because I am in my mid-30s and I've been doing this for 15 years. Like, it be what it be. So I think it's constantly and asking yourself, like, what is it that I want? And I love storytelling. So directing's on the roster. And one of the reasons why I went forward with the agent that I have now, because it was just like trying to be more forward thinking as opposed to, I really struggle getting out of scarcity mindset. And I think it's just the adulthood that I've had. And so it's the idea of like saying no to things to say yes to new things is really, for me, really scary. Mm-hmm. Really scary because I'm like, well, what if it doesn't happen again? What if it doesn't come back? And that's not how things work. And it's really hard to get out of that mindset.
I also think that mindset is most prevalent among artists who their livelihoods are booking to booking, job to job.
Yeah.
And so it feels like every job is your last, even though it's not your last, but you don't know when the next booking is going to happen.
Totally.
And it's terrifying.
Yes. Yes. And I think it's important to like normalize that, because I think we encourage each other to be like, think more positively. I am a natural pessimist, maybe midline realist, but I tend to be like, don't trust it. It's not going to be great. Like, it's my being. And when people are like, you should be more optimistic, I'm like, I think you just met me. It's okay. If you just met me, you don't know me super great. We're not changing tomorrow, but I am genuinely trying to be in a mindset of more of, and I'm starting to try to figure out what abundance means to me. Mm-hmm. Cause they say like, be like, think abundance, all this stuff. And I'm just like, I don't know what that, I don't know actually what that means. So it's kind of been the what I'm trying to answer for myself. The question I've been asking for the last, I think like year, especially with the strike, I was like, is there abundance? Is there? What does that mean? And what does it mean when it doesn't, when this goes away? Because it went away. So I don't know the answer to that yet. I'm working on it.
I try to be positive, but I've also definitely been pessimistic, because I feel that, I mean, I grew up acting like my whole life, like theater, went to school, all those things. But in terms of trying to do it professionally, doing it professionally, last couple years, like signing with reps, all those things. And then I feel like, you know, like a double strike happened. There could be a potential third one. I it's already hard enough. And then, of course, the small amount of time that I've been auditioning professionally.
Yeah.
All these things that are historic have been happening and within that window. And I'm still doing it just because it's what I love to do. And but I can't find my complete joy and purpose from it, because I mean, it's just, I have no control over anything.
No. And I think that's so reasonable and real. And I think the biggest disservice of living in LA was like, it was an all or nothing thing. And I've been full time doing this since 2013. And I have never not had a side job ever. And it's not necessarily even out of necessity. Sometimes it has been, don't get me wrong. Sometimes I'm like, oh, thank goodness for this like bonus paycheck, my word. But I've also, I think deep down, I've never wanted to draw all my meaning out of one thing and to be defined by that one thing. And honestly, every side job, hustle, whatever you want to call it. Like I've been working in like human simulation for medical schools for years. And it's one of the most meaningful jobs I continue to have. And people are like, you still do that? Like you've got blockbusters out. I'm like, yeah, because I get meaning out of it.
Yeah.
Like I get meaning out of it. And these people always want me to be there, always. And they root for me and they pay me money more consistently. No, it is not a stunt contract, which is $135 an hour. Sure. Yeah, this job is 23, but they always want me and I get more life skills out of it. And I constantly think to myself, this could go away. It could. And I don't think it will. Because storytelling is one of the oldest crafts in the book. But I think it's really important to constantly be asking yourselves, because you're allowed to grow out of something. And the mindset that like, well, if you don't keep doing it, means you're a failure. That narrative isn't helpful, because you are allowed to change your mind. You are allowed for something to not fit right now. And at the end of the day, you have to keep your lights on. You have to keep your lights on. You have to get people fed. You get people like the small people in your life. You really got to keep them fed, and their light and their joy is equally as important to you. And I don't know. And again, I'm not motivated by fame or money. Other than I like keeping my lights on and I like not being worried about money. But I think it's really important what you said. Like, you're allowed to also not do it for a minute. That's right. Okay. Who cares?
I feel that every so often I'll just have a month where I just can't think about anything with that. And it's not because it's not because I don't love it, because clearly I do, because why would I put myself through this hell?
Right.
Otherwise, but mm-hmm. It's better for me long-term to pump the brakes every now and then, not think about it and just go live my life, take a trip or.
Yeah. Just,
I mean, a lot of my best friends are not in the industry at all. Some of them are, but I would say a lot of them aren't, and I kind of like that balance as well for myself, because I like not having to talk about it all the time.
Yeah, it's important. It's important. Yeah.
I have anxiety, so I can't with all this. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yes. And this is a high anxiety life, so there are limits.
There truly are. I think those are all the questions I have Fabulous. For you today. I am so grateful that you took the time to chat with me. I'm not kidding. You are so funny and also such a delightful human being. And I just root for you all the time. From afar, I'm rooting for you. But where can people find you?
I do use Instagram. I am not on TikTok. That is TikTok. The algorithm is way too overwhelming. Oh, the elder millennial in me is like, oh no. Oh no. So I am on Instagram at Jessica E. Bennett. I also, you can check out my intimacy company. It's IPEC, IPEC, IPEC Intimacy. We're also on the Instagrams. Our Pride Month merch collection just dropped. It's really cute. But that, so if you go on those socials, I am the COO of IPEC. So like, if you send us an email or you like drop a message, I'll probably see it. And then my personal social is, it's more like my work focus, but I do share like a little bit of family life on there.
Okay. And I'll drop those handles in the show notes of the episode too.
Awesome.
So people can go look at it there and then Fabulous. Find you. Thank you again so much.